Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 4:05 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is November 1st, and I thought I'd kick off with the Canadian index. It was up in here today, and it's certainly extending its very impressive rebound from the pandemic lows. And there's a couple of different charts that are worth looking at, I think. Certainly Shopify is rebounding in a pretty emphatic manner. So that's confirming support in the region of the trend mean and reversing the drop that we saw on Thursday of last week. So still a reasonably consistent advance, still finding support in the region of the trend mean. There's no questioning that the pace of the advance has moderated, but still it's going up. And the rather stratospheric PE ratio is also contracting, so that's certainly positive. Then we can think about that this was a rather impressive move that we had today in Westport Fuel Systems. So it's been coming down for basically all year, and now is bouncing from the region of the upper side of the base formation. It was the leading advancer, and it's a provider of natural gas fuel systems. So when we think about natural gas prices, well, they've certainly been making a lot of headlines of late, but they are starting to come back down now. So the fact that fuel systems for natural gas are beginning to gain traction, that at least supports the view that we're not going to be in a zero carbon environment anytime soon. Well, then in the fertilizers sector, Nutrien is also continuing to push on the upside, and it was up in reasonably positive territory today, and a good part of the reason for that is because we have higher commodity prices, most particularly in the agricultural sector. So wheat pushed on to a new recovery high, and here the pace of the advance is it's been modest and certainly subject to volatility over the course of the last 6 months, but it does appear to be picking up pace. And it is also worth looking at some more back history just to get some idea of just where prices were back in 2007, when there really were big fears that the world was going to run out of food. And even with the supply and bottlenecks that we have in the world today and the upset that's been caused because of the pandemic, I don't think anyone is really thinking that we're about to run out of food, even if it doesn't get to where it's supposed to be in a timely manner. I think it's also worth paying attention to what's happening in the Baltic Dry Index, because it's down again, and well, it was down again on Friday. It's rapidly unwinding the overbought condition relative to the trend mean. Now, I've been hearing this statistic, most particularly from salespeople, over the course of the last few months, and heard it again on Saturday. Mrs. Tracy was interested in looking at these massage chairs, and the salesman in there quoted us this statistic saying that the cost of a shipping container has gone up 10 times in the last year, and that has contributed to higher prices overall, so that they're not able to offer discounts to nearly the extent that they used to in the past, and that they are absorbing the price increases at present, but they couldn't possibly guarantee that that would be the case in future. So trying to inject urgency into the buying decision. But I think it is worth looking at some of the reality in the market. Because, yes, prices from the lows in 2020 are up 10 times. So that's certainly true. But if we then just think about where the prevailing price was for most of the decade before that panicky event, well, it was mostly below 2000, and right now we're at 3500, so that's not a double, Even if we were to say that just take where the moving average was before the beginning of the pandemic and it was around 1600, well, then that is just about a double. But a double is not 10 times. So we've had a big pop on the upside. There is no question of that. But when we start to hear that the cost of shipping goods around the world has gone up by 10 times in the last year, well, it's not really a fair reflection. And we're starting to see some of this price coming back down. Now, we still have significant supply bottlenecks. And that's particularly true because of the semiconductor shortage. And we had news from Apple last week that they won't have enough of inventory to meet all of demand because of the supply bottlenecks in for the holiday season, because of the bottlenecks in the supply chain. And there's certainly news about the lack of truckers and the backup of containers at various ports of contact around the world, most particularly in Chicago right now. And these are problems, there's no question of that. But then we can just simply look at our own personal experience, where the big bottleneck that Mrs. Tracy experienced was in manufacturing. And that was as a result of lockdowns in the summer in China. So that delayed a lot of delayed the shipment by 2 months. So it didn't even get put on the ship until the end of September. But between getting put on the ship in or I guess outside of Guangzhou, then it took about just an extra week at the port in Los Angeles. And I would say that that's not at all unusual, because if your goods are selected for a customs inspection, that can delay them anything from 1 to 3 weeks. So, and that has happened to us in the past. So, in fact, yes, we did have a delay, but it wasn't an out-of-the-way delay. And this is the first time that we've ever brought goods into the center of the country rather than picking them up at the port. And I would say that the entire process of going through the bonded warehouse in Dallas was absolute child's play compared to the rigmarole that you have to go through in Los Angeles. So there is both good and bad to the reality. But when Mrs. Tracy was doing the math, she was very clear in saying that the cost of shipping wasn't that big a deal. That yes, it had gone up, but it wasn't gone up an awful lot. That wasn't going to be the factor that was going to necessitate having to raise prices. Instead, it was the rising cost of manufacturing in China and just the bottlenecks in terms of supply, and then the inability to go around and compare prices between manufacturers, and having to rely on established relationships and basically accept that they're going to ream you on the price. And that, unfortunately, that's exactly what's happened. So, and then of course the risk is that you're neglecting quality control. So, all of those sorts of things do contribute to higher prices. But I get a sense that companies are using these supply bottlenecks and the fact that there are difficulties in getting different items to market as an excuse to raise margins. And I think when we look at what's going on, for example, in the drinks sector, well, Diageo is pushing on the upside. And it's been consolidating for most of the last 6 months. And it was at a new recovery high. I believe actually it's an all-time high in here today. And Pernod Ricard continues to trend higher, and then Heineken has also started to steady up and is pushing away from the trend mean. And we also see that Anheuser-Busch, which had pulled back more than any of these, has also at least begun to steady and is now testing the region of the trend mean. So we're in an environment where some companies are certainly benefiting, even if commodity prices are pushing on the upside. And we can think about the cost of an aluminium can. Well, that's, and we'll be told that the price of aluminium has doubled in the course of the last 18 months, so therefore the cost of an aluminium can should also double. But we should also then pay attention to the fact that the prevailing price of aluminium has been mostly going sideways for the last 15 years, and perhaps the average price is more like about 21.50, and we're at 27 right now. So a doubling in the price of the can is just an additional excuse to raise prices. And this is going on everywhere. So companies have been in an environment where they were constrained from raising prices for a significant amount of time, and it looks like they are now leaping on the opportunity to raise prices. So that's part of the reason that's contributing to inflationary pressures, that companies are raising prices and consumers expect prices to rise because they're starting to understand that inflation is back on the march, and how could it not be when there's so much money has been printed? And 10-year yields are currently holding around the 1.5% level and still above that area, but not moving in a dynamic manner. And yield curve spreads are contracting, and it's increasingly likely that a low has been put in that is significantly below where we've seen the yield curve peak in past cycles, and potentially we're going to see this continue to contract from here. So that's generally positive for stocks. And if central banks are willing to remove some liquidity without, I think, aggressively raising interest rates, that's beneficial for stocks overall. And the S&P 500 was at another new high in here today, and volatility continues to contract. Now, I think that considering that the S&P has a history of failing to sustain upward breaks, it's quite likely that we're going to have some pause in consolidation before very long. But so far, that's and the size of the pullbacks has been really very modest. So there's, I think, reason not to be particularly worried about the outlook. And the Nasdaq remains in a very consistent trend with a series of similar sized ranges, one above another, and was at another new high as well in here today. Now, when we look at the European markets, it was generally positive in here today, and the Spanish market and the Italian markets were leading the way on the upside. And these are bank-laden indices. So the FTSE MIB is pushing up out of this extraordinarily lengthy base formation. So that's a significant event, and it suggests that Europe is back on the front foot. And a good part of the reason for that is that Christine Lagarde seems to be quite unwilling to be the first to embark on raising rates. And Europe is in a situation where they're very heavily dependent on the global economy, and inflationary pressures are rising. But they, because of the worries about China and what that means for European exports, they're unlikely to raise rates in an aggressive manner. But nonetheless, the euro has been reasonably steady over the course of today or the last couple of days, but we've had a great deal of volatility in the last week, and it's hard to say why the euro should rally, because The Europeans aren't going to raise rates in a hurry, and German inflation picking up is certainly something that will become a talking point. But the ECB has to manage the economy for the entire bloc, and the rest of the bloc really needs low interest rates. So we're in an environment where central banks feel like they have to act, but they're very much constrained in what they can do. So gold prices continue to pause here around the $1,800 area, and we're in a triangular pattern. So when the breakout occurs, it's likely to be extremely dynamic, and that I think is certainly something to pay attention to, because we are starting to see that some of the other precious metals are pushing on the upside. Platinum today was up $46, clearly bouncing from the $1,000 area. But I think perhaps more important than that is that it has now clearly broken the downtrend and firming from the lower, from the region of the upper side of the base formation is really quite encouraging. And palladium prices were also up in a dynamic manner in here today, and beginning to firm now, considering that we have this very deep oversold condition relative to the trend mean. I do think it's unlikely that palladium is going to lead on the upside, but it is due up at least a reversionary rally. And of course, a lot of what happens with palladium has to do with the automotive sector. So the shortage of palladium was very much tied to the outlook for nickel, and also the outlook for the automotive sector because of the supply chain bottlenecks. So with palladium starting to come back down, and of course it is now likely to rebound in the short term, but the uptrend has been broken. That's also an additional signal that perhaps some of the most acute supply chain bottlenecks are beginning to ease. The Philadelphia Semiconductors Index pushed on to another new recovery high or all-time high in here today. Now, there's been a lot of loss of momentum over the course of the last year, but it is still rising. And then we also had Nvidia today getting in on the metaverse positioning, and it was also in positive territory, and the pace of the advance is definitely picking up here. Now, when we think then about the oil price, there's a lot of questioning about just how high oil prices can go. And the price today was up about 70 cents, and it's been pausing mostly above $80 for the last month. And OPEC doesn't seem to be particularly willing to massively increase supply, and Russia in particular finds itself in a more dominant position in the energy sector today than it has had in years. So they're going to ensure that they try to maintain that position. They'll be supplying just enough to the market to ensure that prices remain firm, because that will help to support their domestic budgets. But they're going to be unwilling to oversupply the market and try and bring prices back down. The big absence from the market is the major oil companies, because it's politically untenable for them to announce new drilling programs. So all of that revenue is just going to the bottom line. It means that they'll be able to increase dividends and buy back shares. And once this COP26 event is out of the way in Glasgow, well, then we may see some plans to increase additional supply. But perhaps not until that occurs. And we're starting to see that countries like Brazil and India are increasing their commitments to a zero carbon economy, and talking more like around 2050 than what they had previously said, or in Brazil's case, giving more concrete commitments as to how they might in fact achieve those goals. But efforts are underway also to try and bring down energy prices in Europe, and one of those is to reduce the carbon price. So the carbon price does look likely that it is going to fully revert to the mean, and perhaps somewhat more than that, and eventually it'll start to push back up again, but this does look like a more of a medium-term correction event in order to try and bring down these natural gas prices. When we think about European natural gas, it got to an extraordinary level, and it's just about halved from the ultimate peak. I think it's still very unlikely that prices are going to come back down into the base formation, but they could quite easily come back to 100, and that at least would help to ease some of the pressure that's in the market. But these kinds of moves that we're seeing in commodities, where we're getting firstly more volatility and considerably more volatility in some cases, and then these very impressive breakouts from long-term ranges, that is suggestive that we are moving into a new price environment. And it's going to feed through into inflationary pressures. And companies preserving their margins and increasing prices is also going to certainly feel inflationary. So then the onus is going to fall squarely on the technology sector and what it can deliver in terms of labor-saving devices. And it's not so much any longer about a nice to have. These kinds of labor-saving devices and efficiency gains are going to be absolutely essential to try and manage the debt loads that have increased over the course of the pandemic. I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.